Sheffield Live, made in Sheffield, made by you.
Wake up to something different on Sunday mornings by joining me, Pete Evans, for Spinning Jazz. The finest in modern jazz, from hard bop to bossa nova, from Latin to soul. That's Spinning Jazz every Sunday morning at 9 on Sheffield Live. 93.2 FM.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what? I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots, and more. Lots more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You're listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk, and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
Good afternoon, everybody out there. You're listening to The Film Show here on Sheffield Live, and it's just me, Martin, only me. Yes, here I am manning the desks here. It's a bit like Beau's Jest. I've got some mannequins propped up against the other mic, making it look as though there's a full studio here. But it's just me again. Denise is off down in London, going to see Nick Cave again. And fortunately, he hasn't performed any songs for any films that have come out this week, so I don't have to play any new Nick Cave songs. So I've had to have a rejig of how we do things, and I've done a bit of planning, put a bit of thought into this, although it may not seem like that by the end of the show. And so we've got a slightly different setup to how we normally go about things, but you'll find that out as the show progresses. But we are going to start off, as we normally do, with some current movie gossip. Right, so this week there's been a few stories in the press announcing that Christopher Nolan is going to be setting up a production on a new film. But it's all top secret. It hasn't got a title at the moment. Well, it might have, but he's not telling us. And apart from saying the film is set in modern times, that's about all they are saying about it. They are announcing that the film is going to star Matt Damon, Anne Hathaway, Tom Holland and Zendaya. Nothing else is known. And as this film hasn't even gone in front of the cameras yet, this is going to be 2026 before it's probably in cinemas or available to watch. I'm not a huge Christopher Nolan fan. I think his films aren't anywhere near as clever as what he and some of his audience think they are. He's a solid journeyman director, but that's about it. And I'm going to have to try and promise not to say any more about this until the thing is made, has been screened somewhere. Otherwise, we'll just be muttering about it for the next 2 years. But anyway, if you're dying for the next Christopher Nolan film, it's going to be out in a couple of years. Okay, there's been lots of events this week, big events around the world. And I'm wondering if we should already be announcing, again, years ahead of its time, of The Apprentice 2. Yes, surely there's got to be a sequel to the recent Donald Trump Origins film. So, The Apprentice 2, what could that be? The Epstein years? That could be a good one. Or maybe Apprentice 3, The Musk years. Oh, I can certainly wait for those two to come out. Next on my list of weird and wonderful things taking place in the world of cinema, look-alike contests. They seem to be everywhere. And I first heard about these about 2 or 3 weeks ago, where in New York, in Washington Park, there was a Timothée Chalamet look-alike contest. And the prize money for it was £50 for whoever won this contest. And apparently there were several hundred people turned up dressed as Willy Wonka. Well, that's probably going to give you a clue that Timothée Chalamet, or trying to be Timothée Chalamet. And the prize money for this was $50. And probably the weirdest thing about it was that Timothée Chalamet turned up to it, but he didn't win. And then there was another one this week in Dublin, where there was a Paul Mescal look-alike. More of him next week. And this took place in Dublin, as I say, this week, where the prize money was €20, or as one wag put it, 3 pints of beer, or maybe 2.5 pints of Guinness with the prices over there. And if you're anxious to be in one of these contests, there is actually a Harry Styles look-alike contest taking place today in London. That's if you're interested. I don't know what the prize money for that is, but as you can imagine, once this show is over, I will be getting my skates on to get down there. Right, what have I got next? Trailer trash. Right, I saw a very interesting trailer for a new Iranian film, which has already been shown at Cannes and at the London Film Festival. It's called The Seed of the Sacred Fig, and the director, Mohammed Rasoulof, has actually had to leave Iran to avoid being arrested. He's already been sentenced to 8 years in prison and has decided to leave Iran rather than be put in jail for his work. His films have attracted a lot of controversy in the country, have been banned in Iran, and he has had to put up with an awful lot of censorship from the authorities there, as his films are seen to be criticising the Iranian regime. And this particular one is taking the Seed of the Sacred Fig. He's taking a rather unusual view of Iranian society, as instead of looking at someone who is being oppressed within Iran, it's about someone who is actually part of the forces that oppress the population of Iran. It's about a family, the father of whom is elected as an investigative judge within the Iranian legal system. Now, it looks absolutely fascinating, and the trailer that I saw yesterday, it looks like a paranoid conspiracy thriller, and it did look pretty much edge-of-the-seat stuff. So I hope that one is going to be in cinemas soon, and hopefully we'll be reviewing it. But it really does look as though it could be something quite special. So that's The Seed of the Sacred Fig from Mohammed Rasulov. Right, so I need to find a bell. First off, and this is only going to be a brief mention because I only found this out today, the actor Tony Todd passed away this week. And as I've only just found this out, and there's some other stuff we're doing, as you'll hear in a moment, I didn't just want to skate over Todd's work. And so we'll do, let's say, a more fuller tribute to Tony Todd next week. If you don't recognise the name, you will probably know him far better as Candyman. He's turned up in Candyman and his subsequent sequels as the terror who can be invoked by looking in the mirror and saying Candyman three times? Or was it two times? Or did I lose count how many times I was looking in the mirror this morning? So, sad farewell to Tony Todd. And as I say, we'll do a little more on him in next week's show. However, this week's show is very much built around the sad death this week. So it's R.I.P. Quincy Jones. Quincy Jones passed away this week at the age of 91, I believe. And so, as it's just me this week, I was going to put more music into the show and fill out or pad out the show with music. But instead of just putting in an eclectic trawl through my record collection, I've put together a musical tribute to Quincy Jones for today's show. Before I start on this, I just want to say a thank you to Shelley. Shelley has given me some pointers and some advice on what to do as far as the selection goes, and I've got about 9 or 10 numbers that we're going to play throughout the course of the show. So I hope you're going to enjoy what we've got to what we've put together for you to listen to in memory of Jones's work. He is someone who has he's worked across so many musical genres, starting out with jazz, bossa nova, soul, pop music, moving into composing for movies, writing scores. He's been a composer, producer, and arranger. His influence in music and in popular culture has been enormous. And I was initially thinking of trying to play a selection of his work across a number of different genres. But to be honest, it just started running away with me and I wasn't sure where to start or where to begin. So what I've done is I've chosen essentially music that he has composed, arranged for movies. He was nominated for an Academy Award 8 times. He never actually won an Oscar. But his achievements were just absolutely enormous across the entire spectrum of popular music and popular culture. He was nominated 80 times for an Emmy, and won 28 times throughout the course of his career. So I'm going to get ready to play the first track, which is sort of it's sort of for films and sort of isn't. It's a track from one of his earliest albums, his Bossa Nova album. It's a track called Soul Bossa Nova. And although he didn't specifically write it for a film, I think once you hear it, you'll remember it from a fairly recent... Oh, no. From a film that's almost 30 years old now. So it's Quincy Jones and Soul Bossa Nova. Baby, so you can all stop giving your undercarriages a bit of a how's your father and get back to listening to the radio. Yes, used for the opening title sequence for Austin Powers, as I say, nearly 30 years ago now, Soul Bossa Nova. It was during the 60s where Jones started to get an enormous amount of work and acclaim for the work he was doing on movies, for their scores, for their arrangements, and sometimes for songs he was composing. Now, the next piece of music is, as Monty Python would say, something completely different. He wrote a score for Richard Brooks's 1967 movie In Cold Blood, which is... I would say one of the grimmest films I think that's ever been made. It's the story of how two ex-cons, Perry Smith and Dick Hickok, planned to rob a wealthy family in their home, which was way out in the middle of nowhere. But things went wrong, and the family, the Clapper family, were slaughtered by Smith and Hickok. And this event was turned into a masterful book by the author Truman Capote. And Capote wrote this book, which was, the way it was written, it was written almost as though this was a non-fiction book. And the film director, the director of In Cold Blood, the movie, Richard Brooks, took a similar sort of approach to the film itself. It has some big stars in it, but the film is incredibly austerely shot, and the way it develops is in a very, very un-Hollywood manner, almost as if it's a documentary film, although... Saying that, the cinematography by Conrad Hall is absolutely stunning. And Jones wrote the score for the film. And as you'll see, it's of a slightly different tenor than what Soul Bossa Nova was. So it's Quincy Jones' theme music for In Cold Blood. Listening to the film show on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM and on digital, and you can catch up on the show on the station's website. And that was the theme from In Cold Blood by Quincy Jones, who we're paying special tribute to on today's show. Our next piece of music might be familiar to those of you who were around in the 1960s and enjoyed cop shows of the time, as Jones also worked on a number of television shows with theme music and did a lot of work in television, both musically and producing certain TV series, as he was the producer of Will Smith's The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And so again, another string to Jones's bow there. But this piece of music, I hadn't heard this for years as I was trawling through pieces of Jonesy's TV work. I'm not going to tell you what it is. Those of you who might remember the show will pick up on it, but I will tell you once the track's finished. So here we go, a piece of Quincy Jones magic from the 1960s. Martin doing the film show on his own again. And if you didn't recognise that piece of music, then you're too young to remember A Man Called Ironside, a cop show from the 1960s in which Raymond Burr played a San Francisco cop who in the very first episode of the show was shot and lost the use of his legs. And for subsequent series of the show, was in a wheelchair and went around solving crimes in the city of San Francisco with his hand-picked team of helpers. It went on forever, that series, from what I can remember. But anyway, that's Jones's theme music from it. So Jones himself, During the 1950s, he worked with almost every great jazz musician working at the time. He worked with Dizzy Gillespie, Lionel Hampton, Duke Ellington, Sarah Vaughan, Count Basie, Dinah Washington. He worked with Ray Charles, and we'll be hearing one of his collaborations with Ray Charles shortly. He also, which was so unique for a black person in America in the early 1960s, became part of the executive board of Mercury Records. And this was almost unheard of at this time. And this is before the civil rights movement has properly taken hold across all of America. So for an African American to be he was an executive vice president to start off with at Mercury. And this was just extraordinary. He won his first Grammy. I said I made a mistake earlier. I said he'd been nominated for a Grammy, an Emmy 80 times. It's Grammy. Sorry about that. He won his first Grammy for I Can't Stop Loving You. And in 1964, he was asked by Sidney Lumet to do the score for his new film, The Pawnbroker. And that's where Jones's association with cinema began. Around the same time, he worked with Frank Sinatra on a number of Sinatra's classic albums. And he produced Leslie Gore's It's My Party, which was a multi-million selling record around the world. Into the 1970s, he was much sought after for scoring movies, and we're going to play a few examples of those now. And in 1985, he did the score for the adaptation of The Colour Purple. And not only was the composer for the score, he was also a producer on the movie. So yet again, Jones's influence and control over so many different projects. It's one of these things where you can't actually see how he managed to keep all of these plates spinning at the same time. So with that, I'm going to go to the theme music from The Colour Purple from 1985.
Thank you.
the theme music from The Colour Purple by Quincy Jones, who we are dedicating this particular show to, his music and his career. Okay, in 1967, Jones composed the score for what was to be one of the biggest films of that year, In the Heat of the Night, Norman Jewison's famous police thriller, which in which Sidney Poitier plays a black police detective from Philadelphia, Virgil Tibbs, who has to go down to Mississippi to be involved in a murder investigation taking place in the town, and comes up against all of the sort of prejudices and bigotry of the South in those times. The film was a huge smash, won Best Picture Oscar and Best Actor Oscar for Rod Steiger. As I say, Jones composed the score for the film, and this is the title song from the film, where Jones collaborates with one of his previous friends and colleagues, Ray Charles, on In the Heat of the Night.
In the heat of the night, seems like a cold sweat creeping across my brow. Yeah. In the heat of night, I'm feeling motherless somehow. Stars with evil eyes stare from the skies, all mean and bright.
In the heat of the night,
ain't a woman yet been born. My soul for just a little light
in the heat of the night.
In the heat of the night, I've got trouble wall to wall. Oh, yes, I have. In the night, must be an ending to it all. But hold on, it won't be long. Just you be strong, and it'll be all.
Mr. Ray Charles there, and his unmistakable voice there, belting out the title track from In the Heat of the Night. Another thriller that Jones worked on, a completely different type of film, with a completely different type of music that he composed for this, was on Sam Peckinpah's The Getaway from 1972, which was a film directed by Peckinpah and adapted from a novel by Jim Thompson. And the film is all about a bank robbery that goes very badly wrong, and the bank robbers have to cut a bloody swathe across Texas, trying to avoid both the police and a bunch of very unhappy gangsters. It starred Steve McQueen and was famous for he and Ally McGraw falling in love whilst making the film, and she divorcing her husband, Robert Evans. So, as I say, the music in this is very, very different, and I hope you're getting a sense of just how many different modes of music that Jones was a master of throughout his career. So here is the title music from The Getaway. Listening to the film show on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM and on digital, and that was the theme from Sam Peckinpah's The Getaway by Quincy Jones. Okay, review time. I've only got one film to review this week, and I went to see Andrea Arnold's Bird, which has just opened this week in cinemas, and I'm a bit ambivalent about this, although my opinion is changing the more I think about the film. But Bird is set in Kent, in Gravesend in Kent. So it's 2 hours in Gravesend, and I've spent 2 hours in Gravesend. And it follows a young woman called Bailey. She's only 12 years old in the film, played by a newcomer, Nikea Adams, who is absolutely superb in the role that she plays. And Nikea Adams plays Bailey, who lives in a sort of like dysfunctional family. Her father, played by Barry Keoghan, is called Bug. His body adorned with tattoos of various different insects. And as we find out, Bug is only in his late 20s himself. And the whole family is a sort of sort of dysfunctional, living in a huge communal squat. Life is chaotic, and Bailey is having difficulty to sort of find herself in life. And then one day she comes into contact with a stranger in a field, a stranger called Bird, who is played by Franz Rogowski, a German actor who has been in some absolutely brilliant films over the past 10 years or so. He was in Passages last year. He was in Undina, Transit, both of those films by Christian Petzold. And I think the first thing I can remember seeing him in was Michael Haneke's Happy End some years ago. So Bird is this strange, enigmatic character who we only find bits and pieces about and have to piece together where he's from, where he is. And believe me, by the end of the film, there's all sorts of things that could actually be. And also in Bailey's life, there's the chaos of her own home life. There's the chaos of her mother's life with her half-sisters and a very violent, brutal boyfriend. And there's also Bird's search for his family. There is a hint that when he was very young, he disappeared. His mother may have died, and he's trying to find his mother or his father, which leads him on this journey across Kent. So there's loads of stuff in the film, and I'm just scratching the surface here. So loads of different characters. It takes you a while to sort of piece together how people are related to each other. There's a toad that produces, that secretes hallucinogenic fluids, which Bug is trying to make money from. There are also some things in it which it's very, very violent and upsetting at times. And some of it I did find it was maybe just wallowing in that side a bit. And I've great respect for Andrea Arnold. There were just some bits of it that I just wasn't comfortable with. And the communal squat that they all live in, it should be squalor, but it's beautifully filmed. The light inside it is marvelous. Arnold has made what I call this estuary trilogy with this Bird, Fish Tank from about 12, 13 years ago, and her Oscar-winning short film, Wasp. And all three of these films are set around the Thames estuary. Wasp was in Dartford. Fish Tank was north of the river in Tilbury, and this is in Gravesend, back on the Kent side of the river. And really, I think the whole three are a very, very sort of unique vision of Britain. But there were bits of this which I just thought, oh, I've sort of seen this before. You know, there's one scene where there are horses grazing in a piece of like urban scrubland, and I think I just found that a bit of a visual cliche. However, Rogowski's performance is just astonishing. And the other thing about the film, and this is the big thing about the film, and this is where you either go with it or you won't, is it's a magical realist film. So it doesn't matter how authentic and how realistic some of these scenes are, there are elements of magic in there that can't be explained in any other way, and it's going to be up to you whether or not you go with those. And they are very, very subtly introduced, and they're introduced very, very early on, so be aware of them. And it's just been the misgivings I had as I was watching the film are dissipating a bit, let's say, as I've looked back on some of the truly as just absolutely extraordinary moments within it. So I'm going to rate it, but be prepared for a slightly difficult 2 hours. And I might even go back to Gravesend. So I'll rate it. There you go. And we'll get back to some more music before we have to call it a day on here. And we'll go back to another Virgil Tibbs film made a couple of years after In the Heat of the Night. And this is Quincy Jones's theme music for the second Tibbs movie, They Call Me Mr. Tibbs. They Call Me Mr. Tibbs there from Quincy Jones. Now, one of the strangest things that I think about Jones's work is the range of films that he worked on as well. And it's almost quite strange to think that he composed the score for that most British of films, The Italian Job. Yes, Quincy Jones did the music for the Self-Preservation Society. I don't like that. I'm not going to play that. But what I will do is I will be playing the title song from it. And I'd just like to say, because I do have to be a bit of celebrity hobnobbing, I was once interviewed by Giles Brandreth on The One Show talking about The Italian Job, where he and I had some cappuccinos in an Italian coffee shop in Chiswick called The Italian Job. You know what? Things don't get weirder than that. So let me just cue up the next track. And this is Matt Monro's gorgeous title song from The Italian Job on Days Like These. Just give me a moment.
Questi giorni quando vieni il bel sole, la 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 la
when skies are blue and fields are green. I look around and think about what might have been, and then I hear sweet music float around my head as I recall the many things we left unsaid. It's on days like these that I remember singing songs and drinking wine while your eyes played games with mine. On days like these I wonder what became of you. Maybe today you're singing songs with someone new. I'd like to think you're walking by those willow trees, remembering the love we knew on days like these. It's on days like these that I remember singing songs and drinking wine while your eyes played games with mine. On days like these I wonder what became of you. Maybe today you're singing songs with someone new. Questi giorni quando vieni il bel sole. La 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 la.
The Velvet Tones of Matt Monro there on Days Like These from the score for The Italian Job, music by Quincy Jones. What's on next week? What starts next week? Gladiator 2. That's it. I'm not going to go into anything else because we haven't got much more time apart from to hope that you've enjoyed this canter through the work of Mr. Quincy Jones. Just looking back on it, this hour has flown by. And what a range of music we've had on that today. As I say, I very much hope you've enjoyed it. I hope you all have a lovely week. Enjoy your films, whatever they may be. And we're going to play out with something which technically isn't from a film, but it's directed by one of the guests on this show once, Mr. John Landis. It features Mr. Vincent Price. And it's Michael Jackson's Thriller, which was co-written and produced by Mr. Quincy Jones. Bye for now.